Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Show's over.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 601 for the week of February 9th, 2026. I am Tit Gremlin David T. Cole, and I'm here with indoor wife Tara Ariano.
I'm allergic to the sun.
And next door warrior Matt Monagle.
I don't trust my neighbors.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Before we properly welcome our guests, we do have a little podcast business to get through. Sarah, you did not hear her in the intro, is not joining us this week. She's unfortunately out again dealing with a family situation. We hope to welcome her back probably next week. So everyone, think good thoughts for Sarah while she deals with a family situation.
All right, a couple more announcements. One, there is a yearly subscription option now on Patreon. So if you want to subscribe for a year at a time, and I think you save 20%, I think.
Yes.
So it goes from 60 a year to 48. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, down from $5 a month to $4.
Right. And that is an option. And I believe you can switch at any time. You don't have to wait for your whatever you're doing now to run out type of deal. So go to Patreon to deal with that if you wish. And then small follow up from our extra, extra hot great on last Friday. The All Right Fred shirt is in the store. I made good on my threat during that episode to turn my exploding whale doodle into a shirt. And I didn't redo it. I just scanned it in. So it's all there. And it's 5-year-old art glory for you to purchase and bewilder your friends and foes in your local area. Throughmethods.com is where you can find our store.
Now, he is a freelance film critic, co-founder of Certified Forgotten, New Philadelphian, joining us for the first time. It's our friend Matt Monagle. Go Birds!
Welcome.
Yay!
Hey, go Birds! Go Birds! I am very excited to be here. It's very rare that my friendships flow the other direction, where I'm friends in real life, and then I become like professional podcast film TV friends. So this is a first for me.
We use all parts of the whale here.
I love it.
We go to see movies, but then we're like, how could we put this guy to work?
All of my interests, I turn into unpaying part-time jobs. And yeah. So this is par for the course. I'm so excited.
It is the funnel in which we all live.
As somebody who has the premier issue of George magazine because they're writing about Love Story, I don't understand what you're talking about. Anyway, let's get into it. We're talking about The Burbs on Peacock. While his parents spend their retirement on a series of timeshare cruises, Rob, Jack Whitehall, has been gifted their house in the suburb of Hinckley Hills and moved there with his new wife, Samira, Kiki Palmer, and their infant son, Miles, some baby. As the only black person on the cul-de-sac, Samira doesn't feel entirely comfortable there, and she only gets less so when she starts asking questions about the creepy Victorian house across the way that has been empty for 20 years, and then suddenly goes up for sale. The show was adapted from the 1989 movie of the same title by Celeste Huey, formerly a writer on Dead to Me and Palm Royale, and executive produced by Seth MacFarlane. All 8 episodes dropped on Peacock February 8th. We may talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Matt, should our listeners watch The Burbs?
I'm going to say no, but some baby innocent.
That's true. The baby is very cute. Dave?
I'm going to channel the absent Sarah D. Bunting and say more like the Turbs.
Mm-hmm. It's a no for me as well. I did not care for it. Let's get into it. The original movie, The Burbs, which is also streaming on Peacock now, is 101 minutes. And even at that length, kind of slow, in my opinion. Does the story justify a remake that is roughly four times that long, Matt?
It doesn't. And, you know, I think part of the thing that I always keep in mind when talking about adaptations is you shouldn't hold it fully by the standards of the original. It's okay that this isn't the original movie, whether you love it or hate it. Mm-hmm. It is its own thing, and you can't judge it based on the connective tissue of like, oh, is it The Burbs, the movie I saw growing up? At the same time, this TV show only exists because of the movie, and there are thematic ideas and bits of social relevance in the original that don't translate. The new version does its own thing. It's trying to deal with, you know, suburban America. It's trying to deal with race relations in the suburbs. It has some big concepts that it's digging into. But if you're saying, well, where does this tie back to the film and does it carry forward sort of the ideas that were present in the movie? I think it misses. I think it doesn't quite know who it should turn its lens on and who should be the subject of ire when it comes to suburban America. Mm-hmm. You
know? And its treatment thereof, I thought, was pretty kid gloves. I mean, it's not that type of show that's going to go hard on, you know, race relations and moving into a neighborhood where you're the outsider. But it also is so like, you know, it kind of hand waves it away in the first episode for the most part.
Well, it picks up those ideas and drops them. Because I think, you know, this feels like the kind of idea that probably sold in the room where it's like, and we can make it a murder mystery because that's all TV executives want to make in the 2020s.
I had that note as well, for sure.
I just feel like this isn't the most compelling way to cover this material. Like we talked about It, Welcome to Derry, when it premiered in the fall. And that was much more interesting in the sort of like, well, if a whole in a small town, especially in the 60s or late 50s or whenever that was, if a bunch of kids start disappearing, the local cops are going to find a black person to scapegoat for all that stuff. And like that, for being a very oftentimes goofy horror show, was a lot more thoughtful about that stuff than I thought this was. I agree with you that they toy with the idea without actually exploring it.
Right. And that might be part of the baggage of trying to be an extension of The Burbs, the movie, which didn't go hard on anything either. Mm-hmm. But you would think now that they're trying to semi reimagine this, that they would do a 2025, 2026 take on it. Mm-hmm. They don't. And then what's left, as you were saying, is sort of like cramming a pretty standard crime mystery. There's nothing too twisty going on here in, you know, this sort of genericized story, and it just like kind of falls flat, and the length of it is so long compared to the story that's in it that it just stretches out forever. We're at the end of episode 3 and I turned to Tara, I say, what are we, 22 25 minutes into the film version of this story? And you really could see that meeting at Peacock where like, what do you got? Well, we got a sequel to The Burbs. How about you make that a series? And they're like, okay. Then the very end is sort of like, oh, this has just become a watered down making of a murder or something like that.
Well, I mean, to slightly spoil the ending, so la 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 if you don't want to hear it, but it's basically like the same premise as Hot Fuzz.
I was going to say, like, this is Hot Fuzz. This is dull Hot Fuzz. This is cold fuzz.
It's cold fuzz.
Yeah, absolutely. I compare it to that. I would say another comp would be the X-Files episode with, you know, where they play the Petries, Arcadia. Mm-hmm. Like that has got the same setting and it takes, a, you know, obviously a darker take on it. I was expecting something more to along that. I mean, Hot Fuzz is plenty dark as well. Mm-hmm. It is not that. It is sort of the Stone Cold Creamery of those things. You know, just nice, comfortable.
Stone Cold Creamery, very different than Cold Stone Creamery.
Well, we're talking about horror.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the other question that I had, and people were talking about this on Blue Sky as well, and I'll ask this of you, Matt, as our horror expert, is when they talk about, oh, it's been empty for 20 years, and then you realize that just means everything took place in 2005, and like how incongruous it is that like a house could be haunted from an era when a cell phone is still a major plot point. So is it should they have time shifted to make this spookier as opposed to like the mid-2000s where the murder victim could have been a Hanson fan or something?
Matthew, you only have two bars.
I can make it work. Well, let me say that you guys invited me on the podcast, I had not seen The Burbs, the movie, in a long time. And so I went back and rewatched it. And the big question I had in the back of my mind was, does this need to be a remake? Like, right. Do we need another version of The Burbs in 2026?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's like a super classic era either. Go ahead.
Joe Dante, very much. Everybody loves Joe Dante. Nobody has a bad thing to say about him. Sure. But the film itself doesn't occupy even like a Gremlins niche where it has its devoted fans and following. Mm-hmm. And what surprised me after watching the film was how much in there I thought, okay, they have a lot of stuff they can play with. Because the general premise of The Burbs is not good, well-meaning neighbors, you know, stumble on a mystery and save the day and, you know, stop these murders. It's basically, can I swear on the podcast?
Of course.
I'm allowed to do that. Okay.
Only if you go big.
Bored fucking piece of shit white dudes that have nothing to do, no way to fill their time. Mm-hmm. And so they fabricate a conspiracy and obsess over their neighbors. And it just so happens in this one instance, they were right. Mm-hmm. It is very much a movie that is in line with the Nextdoor and the Facebook group generation. Like, if you're looking and seeing everybody being like, I saw someone walk on my lawn, should I shoot him? Like, that's the energy that The Burbs brings. And so if they had tapped into that, where the protagonists or the people that we're following are kind of the villains of the story, I think it absolutely could have worked. And if you worked in surveillance stuff and all of that, I think there was a lot of pieces for them to be like, oh, we are deeply disconnected as a society. We don't know our neighbors. But the utopian, the idyllic version of the world that they've created, it does feel like it's, yeah, I think that they should have kicked the story back a little bit if they were going to do it this way, because they're walking into some thematic territory that they don't engage in earnestly, I think, in any meaningful way. Our neighbors in 2026, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that sentence, and they don't bother with it for the moment.
Yeah. And what they gave us is sort of only murders in the planned community.
Like in the cul-de-sac.
Yeah, it's very familiar.
Yeah, but I mean, the utopian part, like it's sort of utopian and dystopian at the same time, where it's like, there may have been a murder on this block, but isn't it nice that we still have wine night, which seems to be every night, by the way.
Yeah.
We know our neighbors here on social terms better than probably anywhere else we've ever lived as a couple. Mm. And we still don't like see them that much, you know, like we see them to wave. If we have a party, they come over. But that's kind of it. And I sort of was like, the cozy part of that was sort of sweet. And it makes more sense in the 1989 version, I think, than this, especially since some of these neighbors are weirdos and they don't explain why they would be friends. For example, the Mark Proksh character, who's Todd, keeps weird hours. He rides a recumbent trike, freak behavior. And like, it just, when he shows up for wine night, he's like, this is not a wine night guy. We never understand how that friendship happened, because there's no explanation of like why he would want to hang out with two menopausal women drinking bad wine.
Especially when his thing is sort of lone wolf, self-appointed security expert for the area.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a little weird. I thought, I mean, this was my crackpot theory, just because I was like watching episode one and they're all getting together for a wine night. And are like, what is with all the wigs? Not to be wig cop, but what is with all the wigs on these characters? They're terrible. And then I was like convinced for the rest of the show that at some point everybody's going to pull off their wigs. And then the Mark Proksh character never not have a hat on. Mm-hmm. Even when he takes off his helmet, there's another hat on underneath. And I thought, okay, well, surely something's up with their heads. That was my thing. I was waiting for the whole fucking show. Show me the heads. Show me the heads. Never happened. So that was like, I was trying to bring something into it. Some sort of mystery, some sort of like cabal that, and we get a whiff of it right at the end, but what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
I also feel like they miss a little bit on the idea of what we should be nostalgic for in terms of community, right? Mm-hmm. Like the idea of that the neighborhood, the planned community type thing in the 1980s, that's a very, you know, mid-century concept. And so if we're throwing back another 30 years for this film, probably, I mean, like a tiny home community, something like that, like giving it some kind of sense of location that modern audiences are going to relate to. I don't know how many people that are watching this show even grew up in the environment, because it was nostalgia in The Burbs when Joe Dante made it. So it straddles, as I think some of the faultiest remakes do, it straddles this weird line where it's honoring the original, but not embarking on its own story or its own ideas. And it kind of gets caught in the middle ground.
Yep.
I agree with that. Kiki Palmer, very gifted comic actress. We have loved her in things like Hustlers and Nope. Did The Burbs make a mistake making her basically the straight man in this story? Matt, what did you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, first of all, again, I'll go back to the original Burbs. There is nobody, maybe Corey Feldman is the closest thing there is to a straight man in that movie, which is an insane sentence to say, Corey Feldman is your straight man. Uh-huh. Like everybody is on their last nerve. They're dialed in. Like they are going stir crazy in suburbia. And that energy is part of what makes that movie so much fun, is to watch these people on the, you know, the verge of a nervous middle America breakdown. Mm-hmm. And I think Kiki Palmer in this is great. Like, she's wonderful. She's personable, and she definitely can carry a TV show. Like, somebody give her something like this to work in. Mm-hmm. But this is not a story that should have a straight person. I think that this feels like something, if you're going to honor the original, give everybody a bump and let them go out and do whatever they want to do. Like, have like,
yeah,
this, it should be manic energy. And that's a throwback to The Burbs, because there's a bump joke in there too. But it should be manic across the board.
Yeah, I agree. I came into the movie The Burbs after watching the series The Burbs. I hadn't seen it previous. And I was struck by that, how like there is no normal here in the movie The Burbs. Everything is already skewed from the get-go. And I did enjoy that. They were like human gremlins. They're like the prototype for gremlins. They're all like running around being crazy. They all got their own little thing. I just didn't get that sense out of the series. And it definitely could have used some of that energy. Like, I wonder if like it was more of a question of like, you know, it's the same neighborhood as The Burbs, but they're like, they are suffering from decline, the neighborhood, rather than like being even more so, like they could have done something with that. There's lots of ways to tweak it, but there wasn't enough here speaking to community and neighbors in our current climate that like made it seem different. It just made it seem not adventurous, which is a shame. But she was really good in it. A waste of Paula Pell. Mm-hmm. Like, I love seeing in her stuff, and she was just like a nothing here. I was disappointed.
I keep waiting to get tired of her when I see her and stuff, and I just haven't. And that's like, I'm like, she's going to do the Paula Pell thing. And every time I'm like, great, more of it, please.
Yeah. Did you see that Quibi show she was in, the Mapleworth Murders or something like that?
No, but now I have to.
Okay. Yeah. That was pretty
good. It's really funny. It's like a comic murder she wrote with her as the Angela Lansbury character.
Probably on Roku. I think they bought everything. So.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how miscast is Jack Whitehall here as the husband who's maybe a murderer and maybe not, Dave?
Did not get what he was trying to do here. And there is so much of this story is dedicated to him and his high school friend. And I never even bought their friendship completely either. Just really seemed like they met that day fresh from the set of some Hallmark competition show that he looks like. It's not that guy, though, is it? Jack Whitehall?
No, he's British.
We haven't seen him on Hallmark Channel because he looks like a Hallmark Channel guy. Let me tell you. He does,
but he's not. He's like a British comedy actor.
All right. I'm sorry, Mr. Whitehall. But he definitely brought that sort of energy and sort of pull his pants down. There's no dick there sort of feel to it. You know, Alan Rickman Dogma, like, here you are. So, I didn't like what he was doing here. And it's a shame because, like, Kiki Palmer really could have used somebody to play off, and he didn't really provide.
You know, I don't want to compare every film that does genre-tinged race relations in Middle America as Get Out-esque. But to Jack, I would say, I know Allison Williams, and you, sir, are no Allison Williams.
So true.
If you could be anybody, if your character could be played by anybody, at some point I'm like, I don't think that's on you as the actor anymore. I think that there isn't enough stuff there for you to sink your teeth into. It should feel like this person is the right person for this role. And it just doesn't. Yeah. He has an accent. That's cool.
One parting thought that I was surprised by watching the series and then jumping to the movie personally was that this isn't even like the same street or the houses. The way they set it up in the series made it seem like, oh, it's the old Victorian house that hasn't been moved in since, I assume, the movie The Burbs. No, it's a totally different area of the same town.
Yeah.
Somehow the Tom Hanks character in the movie The Burbs looks exactly like the town founder in the series. There's a lot of things here that made no sense. Was there ever a tie-in in the series back to pretzels and sardines from the movie? It just seems like they threw it in there because it's a member berries sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by the just meaningless things they copied. Like, there's a whole scene in the series that copies Tom Hanks digging and hitting a water main or a sewer main. And the same thing happens in the series. And I was like, that's your callback you chose to do? It was so weird, the choices they made when it came to nostalgia plays for the series, I thought.
Mm-hmm. There's a line that they use in the original film, which is a great line. Dick Miller has it where he says, like, I hate cul-de-sacs. There's only one way out and the people are all weird. And I've watched the first few episodes. Maybe they get to the full sentence later, but they keep using parts of that. They're like, you know what they say about cul-de-sacs? People are weird. But you know what they say about cul-de-sacs? There's only one way out. I'm like, you can't even do the whole thing. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Also, you can't have on Peacock all of the blurbs refer to the cul-de-sac crew when Cougar Town owns that. That was their thing. That was specifically what they called each other. Missed opportunity.
Yep.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
All right, it is time to go around the dial. We're going to be talking about what we've been watching on TV recently. Tara, you're up.
Speaking of Cougar Town, I've been watching Shrinking Season 3. Shrinking on Apple TV Plus was a show whose series premiere I watched and immediately decided was not for me. And then I started working for a comedy site and I had to watch the first two seasons to write about it, still never quite locking in. The third season's here. No one's making me watch it anymore, but I still am because it's that very frustrating thing, which is almost good. At first, the purpose of the show was to wring humor out of the disconnect between Jimmy, played by Jason Segel, being a therapist whose personal life has become a total mess since his wife, Tia, was killed by a drunk driver. Jimmy's so unwell himself that he basically decides therapy, as it's practiced properly, is worthless and starts telling his clients what to do instead of guiding them to figure that out for themselves. And he gradually starts to heal and function normally again, accept help from his larger circle of support just in time for Jimmy's mentor, Paul, Harrison Ford, to start experiencing worsening symptoms from his Parkinson's disease. The show is co-created by Bill Lawrence of Scrub and Cougar Town and Ted Lasso fame, Jason Segel, and Brett Goldstein, who is a stand-up comic who also stars in Ted Lasso. And I have no way, obviously, of knowing how comfortable this collaboration has been among the three of them, but it does feel like it's trying to be multiple different shows. The parts I like best are when it's a hangout show like Cougar Town. Characters are in and out of each other's houses and they're each other's business, roasting each other's low stakes character flaws and so on. But because the show also has to be about therapy, it can never gain enough momentum to be as joke dense as Scrubs or Cougar Town were. Any funny scene might be followed by Paul realizing he's started to have hallucinations related to his Parkinson's, or Jimmy's colleague Gabby, played by Jessica Williams, has to deliver a monologue with tears, I'm not exaggerating, streaming down her face to the drunk driver who killed her best friend because he's still around because Jimmy and his daughter Alice have made friends with him. And so far this season, other than Paul meeting and later hallucinating Jerry, a character played by Michael J. Fox, who starred in Bill Lawrence's first sitcom, Spin City, we meet Jimmy's not especially warm father, played by Jeff Daniels. Alice is preparing for high school graduation and got into Wesleyan, which is where Ted and Marshall and Lily all went in How I Met Your Mother. And Jimmy might be trying to get something going with Sophie, played by Kobe Smulders from How I Met Your Mother, the woman that Jimmy bought Alice's car from. All of this How I Met Your Mother intertext is fine as long as Josh Radner stays away. Dave, that is not an invitation to play the clip of him singing.
Okay.
Smulders is probably the only cast member from that show I still like, including Segel. But in Shrinking, the characters I do like, particularly Ted McGinley as Derek, who is the genial husband to Krista Miller's character Liz, are so likable to hang out with. I can just tolerate how much the show feels like it is at war with itself. Like Emily in Paris and Nobody Wants This, Shrinking is a good enough show that I appreciate not having to have a professional take on because no one really cares about them enough. And it will continue to be that, I suppose, because it has already been renewed for season 4. So that is a very, very qualified half not recommendation of Shrinking, a show I watch for really no reason.
Well, everything you just said makes it seem real funny.
It's, well, parts of it are. This is the problem. Like, it's the dark parts are too dark. Yeah. It just needs to. It's
because Harrison Ford's so grumpy all the time.
He is very grumpy.
Fucking Parkinson's.
They do have a runner of fuck Parkinson's. You could write on this show.
All right.
go do a spec. Get hired on it.
This is my spec. Harrison Ford goes to buy some bananas, but they're too expensive. Fucking bananas. There you go.
Wow. Well,
I know, right? Is he in the room with us?
Incroyable.
He's not allowed to drive anymore because of his Parkinson's. So that's one of the other many things that's too sad in this comedy show. Anyway, since Sarah's absent, I will do her plug. With ICE and Border Patrol threatening to ramp up enforcement in Springfield, Ohio, against Haitian Ohioans who are possibly losing their temporary protected status, depending on what courts decide, there are resources to help that population, that community in Springfield, and we'll link to ohioimmigrant.org, which has specific links where you can help and where you can donate. So you can find that link in the show notes.
All right, Matt, what have you been watching recently?
I have been watching and actually just finished season two of Interview with a Vampire. I am going to, I know what podcast I'm on. I know that I'm preaching to the choir probably about the quality of this show. But what I will say is there might be some folks out there that have heard the buzz, heard the hype as I did and said, I never really had an Interview with a Vampire period of my life. I never really got into the books. I don't have any nostalgia for the original film.
No itch you need to scratch here.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. And what I will say to that, I was very much one of those people. This was not a franchise in any way, shape, or form that I had any particular love for. And so the volume of recommendations for the show just became so loud that even I couldn't ignore it. There were so many folks in my life that were like, Interview with a Vampire, you got to watch it. So my wife and I sat down, shout out Andrea, sat down to watch the show, and I was blown away. So we binged two seasons in the better part of like 2 or 3 weeks.
Nice.
And what I will say, for those folks that maybe are on the hook a little bit, yes, there is everything that you think of with Interview with a Vampire. You have your gothic interiors. You have your longing looks. It is a modern version of the show, so the queer subtext is not a subtext. It's just a love story between the two main characters. I'll let you parse that one out for yourself as you watch it. But what really blew me away was the second season. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but the second season has a few of the characters relocating to Paris in the aftermath of World War II. They are kind of dealing with the fact that they are expats, that they're dealing with a community that is coming back together after the war. There are characters that were French sympathizers of the Nazis and are trying to go back to their life. There are a lot of anti-fascist characters that the war continues for them. And the main storyline is around the Theater of the Vampire, which is this theater company made entirely out of vampires that uses that as a pretext to not only murder in broad daylight, but to write their own histories of what it means to be a vampire in modern day society. Shout out specifically to Ben Daniels, who plays Santiago in season two. It's such a cool character. It's such a cool performance. And the second season, they have the guts to basically sideline Sam Reed, who is giving one of my favorite television performances of all time.
He's
Sam
great.
Reed as Lestat. Mm-hmm. They don't use him for like half the season. He is given in like little peaks and bursts here and there, but they're so confident in their material that they sideline him until the very end of the season. And then the third season that comes out on April 12th, I think is going to be all Lestat all the time. But it's such a dynamic and interesting, and they use mixed media in really cool ways. And it's still a really powerful, ugly story about love and obsession. And it always has Eric Bogosian doing his thing, and I will watch anything that man is in. So let all of this serve to tell you that if for some reason, like me, you thought that everybody you trust for anything else is wrong about Interview with the Vampires, they're not. You should watch this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so good. And I think it's really benefited from being on Netflix because I know very few people who have AMC Plus, but their deal to much, much later drop their shows over there, I think really has boosted a lot of the AMC originals, which is great.
It's nice to be watching it.
Season three, Lestat is doing his music thing, right?
From the books?
Lestat the Vampire, I think, is the book that they're technically adapting.
Yeah, that looked wild. I saw just a quick tease a couple of months ago. And I was like, yes, I am here for that. Sam Reed also really good in The Newsmakers.
The Newsreader.
Newsreader, thank you. Sorry. From Australia. This sort of a period piece about him and Anna Torv being sort of the face of the news and different networks over there. And it plays out like a really low stakes, like Sports Night or something like that. More serious than that. But yeah, well cast. And I love the retro trappings of the whole thing. So if you need more Sam Reed fix, check that out. Definitely bringing a different vibe than Lestat, but I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. How couldn't he?
Matt, you are our horror expert and you are out there on the internet. Where can people find you and learn more?
Yes. Oh, I thank you for giving me an opportunity to plug myself.
Mm-hmm.
My primary home these days is on Blue Sky. I'm at monogle.bsky.social, which is where you can follow me and see what I have to say about horror and horror novels and horror comics and all the various ways I give into my obsessions. But I would be remiss if I also didn't plug the horror publication that I co-founded with a friend of mine out of Los Angeles. It is called Certified Forgotten, www.certifiedforgotten.com. And it is one of the dozens, hundreds of indie arts criticism publications that have popped up over the last couple of years, sort of patchworking together the dying industry that is film criticism. I'm really proud of the work that our writers do. We work with some incredible people, both new voices in the industry as well as established greats. So as long as we can continue to do that, we will still have good horror criticism, at least at certifiedforgotten.com.
All right, give us your recent horror recommendation.
Oh, recent horror recommendation.
Any media.
Any media?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll give you a book recommendation. I'm in the middle of about halfway through reading a book called Wrecked, which is sort of like Fight Club if it was about AI, is the hook. And it's a horror novel about a character who is sent a dark web website and starts seeing hundreds, thousands of videos of him dying in various ways, and then finds out that what he has discovered is not a glimpse into a parallel universe or some kind of artificial intelligence, but it's actually a betting site. And the people that render the videos and what they will do in order to make sure that their bet wins, that their death is the one that plays out. It is bleak. I can never remember how to pronounce his last name. Czech Poloniak. Is that how you pronounce Poloniak?
Polonic, I think.
Polonic. Chucky P, as he, you know, as we like to call each other. Mm-hmm. It's that sort of like uncomfortable read where you kind of want to quit a bunch, but as the plot unfolds, it gets really interesting. So if you're looking for a feel bad read this spring, I recommend Wrecked, R-E-K-T, Wrecked, lowercase too, because it's cool.
All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great, our club exclusive episode. This Friday, we're going to be talking about how to get to heaven from Belfast. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club. If you're not a member, you can sign up monthly or yearly now. And come back here, EHG Prime. We're welcoming back Jessica Morgan to talk about Love Story, the JFK Jr. something or other boo-hoo sadness story.
Well,
is that the official subtitle?
Highs and lows.
It's got a subtitle.
It used to be American Love Story, JFK and Carolyn, I think, but it's just Love Story for whatever reason now.
Trying to eat off the delicious SEO of movies gone by.
I guess.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot. Cheap ass vertical video commercials have no place on my giant adult TV. I understand why TikTok or Instagram ads are shot the way they are. On social media, it's easy to be drawn into a front-facing video of a person sitting in the usually driver's seat of their car telling a story that seems compelling because of their enthusiasm or charisma. When that story ends up being about their incredible new cosmetic product or a great deal at a fast food restaurant, you might be annoyed, but you understand the hustle the advertiser just ran on you. They co-opted the aesthetics of the platform to trick you into trying to sell you something. I also know why a certain class of advertiser thinks it's fine to port those kinds of ads over to TV. Brand ambassadors who seem like real people lend you a certain kind of authenticity we all acknowledge is fake, sure. But more importantly, getting a real or phony influencer to shoot their own ads saves you all the costs you might incur for a commercial with higher production values, like hiring a crew, securing a location, getting a professional designer to create a graphics package, etc. Maybe you hired a copywriter to produce a script for your in-car star to deliver. Maybe you just gave them bullet points and let them make it their own. And I understand I'm talking about TV commercials in a very antiquated way. The only time anyone generally sees a TV commercial anymore is if it runs during a live event, like sports or award shows or end of list. There's no reason to try to trick a TV viewer into watching your commercial like there is on social media. If a normal person is seeing a TV commercial, it's because for one reason or another, they are not able to skip it. I am not normal, as I've probably said in this podcast before. When I watch shows that I've DVR'd, I let the commercials run because I use those 3 or 4 minutes to read a couple of pages of a book. There's basically no other time in my media consumption schedule to do it. Be disgusted if you want. I finished 2 books last weekend, so suck on that. But this is how I have been exposed to front-facing vertical commercials for the likes of Deal Dash or Lysol playing somewhere I should never see them. The very large television in the living room of my home where my children play. It's not right. I know as far as art forms go, TV commercials rank quite low in creativity and prestige, but inarguably, there are some that have lasted long enough to become part of the popular culture lexicon. I'd like to buy the world a Coke. I can't believe I ate the whole thing. What's up? The little girl who says, how dare you? And others. And I know everyone's getting squeezed. I know a commercial that runs in the third ad block during a typical high potential episode doesn't need to be of the same quality as one that debuts during the Super Bowl or the Oscars. But you should still respect me enough as a TV viewer who has not cut the cord like all those fucking quitters to try to influence my purchasing decisions with a message that has some imagination and polish. My best friend TV should not be made to show me a commercial some influencer farted out in 5 minutes. I am not a crackpot.
How dare you?
Thank you.
I understand that the orientation of the video isn't your main problem here, but would it help in any way if your TV could automatically rotate depending on the aspect of what we're watching?
No.
Yeah, you don't want to give in to that.
No.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
It is.
I think I first saw that like watching something late at night, and I was taken aback at the audacity of only taking 1/5 of my screen to show me whatever they wanted to show me. And yeah, it was just like, it was like some bullshit.
No, it's probably Lumi, because when we used to watch Frasier at night, they used to advertise that all the time.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a brand I recognized. Like, at least Lumi was in Target for a hot second. It was that kind of thing. It was right next to the Hairy Blades or whatever.
Right.
But this was, that's where we're at now, are we? We've separated all the audiences so much that we're only getting TikTok ads. Yeah, it is sad.
As somebody who has to, you know, work in marketing, and someone who has to think about this kind of stuff, it is bleak for you to be like, look up from your phone, another phone.
Yeah, exactly.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now serving the entire cafe right from your countertop with a Ninja Luxe Cafe. Espresso, drip coffee, cold brew. If you can crave it, you can brew it. No barista badge required. Barista Assist technology handles the hard parts. Grinding, weighing, brewing, so you can take the credit. Top it all off with velvety, dairy, or plant-based microfoam. Hot or cold, all hands-free, naturally. You bring the craving. You bring the company. We'll bring the cafe. And maybe the bragging rights. Now serving the Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our good friend Sean. Sean, take it away.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. I'm submitting the final episode of Star Trek The Next Generation for the canon, Season 7, Episode 25, All Good Things. The show had a rocky start in Season 1 and eventually found its footing in Season 3. At its best, The Next Generation told self-contained stories with very little personal conflict. The main characters were barely allowed to evolve so that the episodes could run in any order in syndication. This episode particularly highlights how much the characters and the writers did change over the course of the 7-season run. Written by Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Braga, it has been widely acknowledged that the final episode is an all-time banger and much better than the first movie, Generations. Through 3 different time periods, we see Picard interact with his crew. There is a sense of unease with a visibly confused Picard in a robe, not in uniform, approach Troy and Worf on a date. Normally unflappable, Picard struggles to describe what he has gone through as his memories dissipate. Each timeline shows us something special. Old Picard 25 years in the future with neurotic syndrome. In the past, we get moments from the very first episode, Encounter at Firepoint, with Tasha Yar still alive, special guest star Colm Meaney, who was on DS9 at the time, and in the present, with the current crew working with his full trust. The show knew how to showcase Patrick Stewart. His old age and neurological disease gives him a lot to do acting-wise. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a reason for the rest of his old trusted friends to doubt him.
It's okay, Captain. Everything's gonna be all right.
I'm not senile, you know. This did happen. I was here, I was talking to you, and then... And then I was somewhere else. I was on the Enterprise. I was back on the Enterprise. At least I think that's where it was. I was in sick bay. It might have been a hospital.
Captain, I think we should go back to the house and call your doctor.
Yes, yes, I know what you're thinking. It's the Iromotic syndrome. He's beginning to lose his mind, the old man. Well, it's not that, and I'm not daydreaming either.
Well, all right. All right. So what do you want to do about it?
Data. I want to see Data.
We get the slow reveal of what everyone looks like in the future and what they're doing, including a few jokes. The writing gently pokes fun of Star Trek-isms, Troy's psychology, Worf's sense of humor, and the Enterprise being constantly in peril. They give Professor Data gray hair, several cats, and the ability to laugh, and getting the gang back together is always fun. The great antagonist of the series, Q, comes back in the same costume from the very first episode. Every scene with Q is awesome. While they had the tendency to saddle this character with bad scripts over the years, especially in Voyager and DS9, they gave John Delancey the best scenes in this episode. I really wanted to clip them all. He is so playfully written, and he gives his line readings great little twists.
It's time to put an end to your trek through the stars. Make room for other more worthy species.
You're going to deny us travel through space.
You obtuse piece of flotsam. You are to be denied existence. Humanity's fate has been sealed. You will be destroyed.
Q, I do not believe that even you are capable of such an act.
I? There you go again, always blaming me for everything. Well, this time I'm not your enemy. I'm not the one that causes the annihilation of mankind. You are.
Me?
That's right. You're doing it right now. You did it before, and you'll do it yet again.
What sort of meaningless double talk is this?
He doesn't understand! I have only myself to blame, I suppose. I believed in you. I thought you had potential. But apparently I was wrong. May whatever god you believe in have mercy on your soul. This court stands adjourned.
The episode gives us the comforting standard Star Trek technical problems, too. The crew race to solve the problem of the spatial anomaly in the Devron system in the three different timelines. This lets the audience see where Picard and his crew came from, with their rocky start, their current formation, and one possible misanthropic future. It gives Picard a chance to give inspiring speeches, and for Geordi and Data to spout technobabble, also philosophizing. So much philosophizing. Everything you want from a Star Trek episode.
Come here. There's something I want to show you. You see this? This is you.
I'm serious. Right here. Life is about to form on this planet for the very first time. A group of amino acids are about to combine to form the first protein. The building blocks of what you call life. Strange, isn't it? Everything you know, your entire civilization, it all begins right here in this little pond of goo. Appropriate somehow, isn't it?
Clear editing, writing, and visual cues between the time periods make sure there is no confusion as to where and when you are. Picard turns and passes on information from one time period to another in very clever ways. As the show hurtles towards the climax, the cutting between the timelines is faster and faster. On a television budget and some budget symphonic underscoring, they ratchet up the tension as the various enterprises explode to save humanity.
We wanted to see if you had the ability to expand your mind and your horizons. And for one brief moment, you did.
When I realized the paradox.
Exactly. For that one fraction of a second, you were open to options you had never considered. That is the exploration that awaits you. Not mapping stars and studying nebula, but charting the unknown possibilities of existence.
Q, what is it that you're trying to tell me?
You'll find out. In any case, I'll be watching. And if you're very lucky, I'll drop by to say hello from time to time. See you out there.
With Q gone, Picard is back where he started, as with most Star Trek episodes. It is literally the first scene again with Picard in his bathrobe. The final scene is a familiar one with the bridge officers playing poker. Only this time, Picard joins the bridge crew for a round of poker, no longer at a remove. They play as a family. They even repeat this iconic ending for the sequel series Picard. This is widely considered the best Star Trek finale ever. And if there had never been any movies and never been any sequel series, this would have been considered the best ending for Star Trek The Next Generation. I submit this for the canon.
Thank you, Sean. Matt, you chose this from our submissions. Please start us off.
Yes, thank you, Sean. I was, a really big Star Trek fan growing up. And as I was listening to Sean's excellent sort of description of that, one of the things that stood out to me is that my Star Trek fandom basically disappeared at the start of the golden age of television. And, you know, now that I've watched this episode again, there's a part of me that's like, you could binge them all. You know, you're not doing anything this weekend. So I see this coming back a little bit. But as a kid, I was such a bigger fan of Deep Space Nine than Next Gen for specifically the reasons that I think Sean points out, which is that everything sort of reset gently a little bit in Next Gen. It didn't feel like there was a through storyline that they were building to, that there were these epic stakes, and DS9 had epic stakes, and there was a war, and there was a messiah, and all this really cool stuff that was building to this giant climax. But rewatching this episode, it hit me differently. And the idea that closure can look like this, and it doesn't look like half your cast dead or these giant, great, huge stakes that have never been seen before in the history of the show, it sat really well. And I wonder if that is partially because I have spent the last 10 plus years watching shows that were so built on momentum and the next big thing and the next big thing. And where does it, and the scale grows and now there's a dragon and an undead dragon and it's just blah, blah. And I just like the fact that the climax for this show, which feels like a proper resolution for the characters, is just resetting the table, maybe slightly one step forward in terms of their relationships and trust. I loved that. And I was surprised at how comfortable it felt to slip back into Next Generation mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's like a vibe right now to a lot of people out there where it's like, I enjoy good writing on television, but I also miss the time where you could have a lot of stories in a season of a place I'd like to live in. And Star Trek was that. Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine was that. Big seasons, packing a lot of story in there. I would argue Star Trek has a hit rate of about 60%. Mm-hmm. Star Trek Next Generation, there's a lot of episodes that are just like, I don't remember that at all. And it's just sort of like there. But the ones that hit really well, those are the ones we remember. And there's enough of it, right? There's enough Star Trek Next Generation that when you put 60% of its bulk, you're like, wow, great series. Lots of cool stuff happened. But you're right. There's not that throughput. So when you get something that has 20 episodes, 22 episodes a season, but it's also telling this story, you know, like Deep Space Nine, not super fast. And it cranks up once we get into the Dominion War stuff and all that. But I think there's a nostalgia for that. And I think like this is the end of that for Star Trek. We're approaching the end of that where it's like the characters everybody loves, the kinds of revised Trek that we are exposed to. Like, I think Star Trek Next Generation started off like The Force Awakens, which is like, it's very much what you like from the original. We're not going to like stray too far from that formula. And then eventually they sort of do, and it becomes its own thing. And that's what people remember it for. You know, Sean talking about coming into its own in season 3 is absolutely right there. So we're at the end of this series, and I was impressed how they get to have their cake and eat it too, which is they do get to wrap up storylines and have a little hint of what you're talking about where they kill half the cast. Like, there is a theoretical future, which they undo by the end of the episode, where they get to do some of that. Deanna Troi's not in the picture. What happened? Riker and Worf hate each other over all that. You know, what's going to happen there? But they close that loop at the end of this, which I thought was a smart way, because they get to play nostalgia with the encounter at Farpoint segment. They have continuity with what's been going on in the series so far. And then you get that speculative stuff that people were really into in a lot of episodes behind us in Star Trek. It's always fun when you get to see an alternate universe so-and-so, whether it be the Terran Empire or when Enterprise D follows up, or we got double Rikers and all that kind of stuff. So I thought this was a clever framing for a finale and a smart framing. I could have done with a little less of the meaningless techno babble. I enjoy a little bit of that. I enjoy a Tachyon mention as much as the next guy, but it was a lot in this episode. And I understand they're trying to build something semi-cohesive just to explain why they wanted three time periods. in order to tell this full story. But that's always been sort of, for me, the weakest part of Star Trek Next Generation. And I think series since then have responded to that with a little less of that going on. Mm-hmm. But seeing Q and Picard being the focus of the episode is really great. Q with his line reading of goo is my favorite part of this rewatch. I absolutely loved it. I enjoyed the Picard gets to do 10 questions and their genie rules where he accidentally asked 2 questions and that counted. So a lot of little touches like that. I have a question, though. There is a future where Beverly Crusher is the captain of a medical frigate of some sort. Mm-hmm. Just before she's given the command to go to warp, she lets Picard sit in the seat and do it one last time. If she gave the command, what would be her thing? What's her engage? Because I have a theory on what it was, but let's hear from the group. What do you think? Beverly's going to do it. She's going to put her finger out and say what?
I don't remember enough of like what the...
Well, here's what it is.
Okay.
Use your line, Dave. You want to use your line?
I want to use my line. Here it comes, guys. Get ready. Call your friends. Pause it. Call your friends. Gather around your iPod. Stat. Warp 13. Stat.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I actually approve. That was worth the build up in my mind.
Ah, my ears, all the clapping. Last thought, something that really, actually two things that made me laugh in this episode. One, Riker's old man makeup, where they just put all the liver spots on his forehead. Forget about the rest of them. And there is a scene, I think, when we're first seeing one of the Enterprises, and there's two random crew members who are bringing in cargo through the bridge. And it's one of those early 2000s Lowe's containers with like the tooth edge lids that close in on each other. I was like, aw, you guys just went to Lowe's for your props. That's adorable. I love it when there's just real world things just like, we don't care. Like there's a mug early on, they're drinking tea. And it's just like every farmer markets artisan making the mugs where it sort of looks like stone. There's paint dripping off the lid.
Yeah.
They got those in the future too. So phew.
That's some crew member's hobby. It's that they throw pots.
Ensign Joyce, Jesus Christ, stop it with the mugs.
Well, it's this or she's going to go on her loom. So decide what you want more. Anyway, yeah, you're both so right about sort of the different schools of thought about what television should do. And they're both sort of represented in this episode, of the podcast, which is a limited series of 8 episodes. That's a very unsatisfying murder mystery, which is, I'm going to say, half of what new shows are in the 2020s. Versus something like this, where it's just 20 plus episodes and you know going in, some of them are going to be shit and some of them are going to be bangers that you remember for the rest of your life. And all it really boils down to is you want to see charismatic people working together to solve a mystery of some kind. And that is true of this show or Suits or High Potential or Elsbeth, like any of the sort of throwbacky shows that we're getting now that are so Columbo-esque that is also such a satisfying way of telling stories. But this is, you know, the space version of that. There's a mystery. Obviously, Q is involved. I don't think I have ever seen a Q episode I didn't like. And this is no exception. Q is the best. And it's very funny that they just sort of borrowed from the Flintstones, like the Great Gazoo idea of like a magic person who can make anything happen.
Yeah. Does Q actually ever say hello, dum-dums? Because I could actually see that being in the script. Yeah.
Yes, totally. And I was very happy when the Q tradition continued in the latest season of Strange New Worlds with his son, played by Rhys Darby, which was very funny.
R,
as we called him. Yes, of course. Yeah, I loved every Q Picard interaction, loved him sticking his hand in the KY jelly of fate and calling it goo. Loved how they sort of subtly, like Sean said, had different looks for each of the time periods so you would know where you were. Even if obviously Picard with beard cues you, but the different uniforms does too. And it was also sort of touching to go back to that first episode and just remember, you know, when Picard was meeting his crew and what that was like and how they, you know, were not totally on board with everything he was doing, but they're still doing it because that's Starfleet. Like he's, you know, they respect the chain of command. And even if he seems crazy, you gotta go ahead.
Although you pointed out, and I really enjoyed it, the lengths which they go to include Riker in the early thing without actually having to film him because, of course, you know, we have beard, no beard. You know, he's put on some pounds since Encounter at Farpoint. So it's just like one of those things. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
No. In the little TV.
They video call him and he's not looking at the camera at all. It's very self-conscious, but it's adorable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I had to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice that they found a way to bring Tasha Yar back because, you know, she had to depart the series midway through or however long it was. Yeah, this was just a very nice way to see a bunch of people saying goodbye. And then as we get in the final scene, like not saying goodbye, Picard realizing it's okay to be friends with your crew. Just chill and not worry so much about keeping yourself apart, which is very sweet community. He went to wine night to bring it back to the verbs.
It's not an ending. And I like that about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the end for the characters and whether that's, you know, oh, they're going to make movies or different stories. I wish when I read a follow-up novel or a comic book or something of a franchise, it didn't feel like they were having to be like, but this character didn't actually die. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes your narrative ends, but the world continues. And I think Star Trek got that just right.
Yep.
All right. Let's make this official. Matt, what do you say? Canon worthy or not?
I'm going canon all the way. I would have said canon even if I didn't like it because Sean was so goddamn persuasive.
Great. Tara?
Yep. Yay for me as well.
Me too. So. That means that Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 7, Episode 25, All Good Things, you are officially inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time to discover the winner and loser of the week. I have this week's winner. It is video game Baldur's Gate. It is getting a series adaptation at HBO from Craig Mazin of Chernobyl and The Last of Us.
In that order.
Yes, agreed. I found it interesting because it feels like HBO is like, we need more Game of Thrones, but the Game of Thrones spigot is not giving us enough Game of Thrones. What's out there that we could do some Game of Thrones stuff with? It is a slightly different vibe, is a little more playful, a little more Dungeons and Dragons. That's where it comes from than Game of Thrones. But, you know, who knows what he's going to do with it to zooze it up. Baldur's Gate seems to be a video game that sort of is the four quadrant version of video games. It's got people that enjoy role playing games. It's got a lot of horn dogs that play it or just like playing it to see who can fuck who and stuff like that. So. Sure. I feel like they got day one audience baked in for this thing. So I imagine it's going to be pretty popular out of the gate. It feels like the Witcher fans can be picked up here. Let's get them. You know, it feels like that sort of show to me.
When will we get the ball sort watercolor puzzle show?
Wasn't that Dark Water?
Yes. I have our loser of the week. It is Tate McRae. She is a Canadian singer and dancer, and she appeared in an ad for NBC's coverage of the Olympics, saying how excited she was to watch Team USA, and all of Canada did not care for that. She had a huge backlash against it. Even if this were happening 10 years ago and like relations between the countries were normal, Canadians would still get mad.
This is not something you do in Canada.
This is not something you do in Canada at all, and especially not right now. Like, it's a crazy decision.
You have to understand we have a chronic inferiority complex in Canada, and you can't do this. It's just something you don't do. It's just like, oh my God, did you just see what he did?
Yeah, someone on her team should have stepped in and said, you cannot do this to your image.
Right.
Because she had to post something saying, you all know I'm Canada down. Like, no, we don't. Because you were just saying how great Team USA is.
Canada down?
Yeah.
Also, Tate McRae sounds like a potato product company from Canada.
It's a very strange nickname for considering, I believe her real name is Tatiana.
Yeah, okay.
So I don't know. It does make her sound like a chip.
All right. Well, speaking about Canada down, do you know what time it is?
It's game
time. It is game time. All right, since Sarah's absent, this is going to be a non-regulation game time, but we're going to play for keeps anyways, people.
What?
Today we are playing 19 Questions TV Horror Edition.
Ooh.
Which is a lot like 20 Questions, but slightly less. We also let you guess more than 19 times. So there's that confusing part of it as well. Here are the rules. They are simple. First person out of the gate will ask me a question that could be answered yes or no. If they get an affirmative, they can keep asking questions. If they get a negative, play goes to the other person. We keep going back and forth until somebody guesses the TV horror thing, or I get fed up and I call it. That's pretty much it. Additionally, I'm going to give you a choice of buckets. We have characters, deaths, episodes, scenes, group of characters, locations, and objects. Got one or two for each of those. So I'm going to let you, when it is your turn to go first, pick from those buckets. All right, let's throw it to Picky to see who will be starting us off today.
We will start with Tara.
All right, so Tara, you're going to guess first, but you also get to tell me what bucket we're going to play from first.
Let's do location.
Location. All right. Location. All right, Tara, ask me my first yes or no question about this TV location.
Is the show it's from still on?
It is not. So play goes to Matt. Your first question.
Is it something we've talked about on the show today?
I'm going to say yes to that one.
Okay.
Not directly, but certainly part of it we've talked about.
Okay. Is it, so location, something that we've indirectly, is it?
Let me clarify. We haven't talked about the location, but we've talked about perhaps the show.
I figured. Okay. All right.
Okay.
My next question would be, is it Game of Thrones related?
It is not. Play back to Tara.
Is the show on HBO?
It is not. To Matt.
Oh, is the show The Burbs? I feel like I should ask that.
Not The Burbs.
Okay, thank
not
God. On. That was too obvious.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay, was it a network show?
It was a network show.
Was the network NBC?
It was not NBC.
Was the network CBS?
It was not CBS.
Was it ABC?
It was not ABC.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Was it Fox?
It was Fox.
Okay. That doesn't narrow down too much for me. I don't remember what we talked about on the show.
The show that we talked about this episode on Fox.
Oh,
I think I was.
Know. Let me just say, maybe you mentioned it.
Maybe I mentioned it.
The show.
Well, now this is really doubly embarrassing.
Actually, we both mentioned it.
Oh, great! What did we talk? What did we talk about on this show today? Fox show 24.
Is it from the X-Files?
It is from the X-Files.
Okay.
Oh.
Is it under the bed where Mrs. Peacock lives?
You are correct. It is Mrs. Peacock's bed, comma, under. That is good for 1 point. All right. We'll start this one with Matt. You get to choose your bucket.
I've got an unfair advantage. This is my first episode. I don't know how you guys do your stuff. I'm going to choose the bucket of death, please.
Okay. Death. Ask your first question.
All right. Is it a show that we talked about on the podcast today?
It has been mentioned.
Ooh. Okay.
Is it a Star Trek series?
It is not a Star Trek series.
All right, fair enough.
Is it a premium cable show?
Yes.
HBO?
Yes.
Okay. Is it from It? Welcome to Derry?
It is not.
Is it from Chernobyl?
No, but I considered something from Chernobyl for this game, okay. But it didn't
it
make
is
it.
It is horrifying.
Half point for me anyways.
The water scene where all the lights go out. I thought it was really creepy.
Okay.
All right, back to Tara.
All right, an HBO show we talked about today.
Yeah. And it's a death.
And it's a death.
Inside
and it's
of
a
that.
Horror.
Well, yeah.
Okay, well, is it from a Game of Thrones franchise show? Okay.
All right. Is it from The Last of Us?
It is.
Oh, you're going to have to take this one because I bailed.
Oh, I played the games. That's as far as I can get. Is it Jill's death?
Which one's that?
Main character?
Anna
from
Tor.
The first. No.
I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you.
Oh, all right. All right.
I wanted the scene from the show, which I doubt is in the video game, but explain how she dies in the video game. Maybe it's the same.
I don't.
Okay, well, in the TV show, she has a really gross mushroomy kiss with somebody who is turning her into a mushroom
right,
just before she explodes the room with her lighter. So I'm going to give you that point. That was Last of Us mushroom makeout death.
Two mentions of Anna Torv. We're doing good work here.
Back to Tara. Bucket, please.
Object.
Object.
Is this show still on?
Is this show Star Trek related?
Was it a premium cable show? Okay.
Was it a NBC show?
Okay, was it a network show?
Okay. I mean, it was on a network, but I'm just going to drop you a hint, not a show.
Associated is a show that you can...
It's not a show.
Is it a movie?
I'll give you that.
I don't like how not helpful that answer was.
Okay, so like a TV movie.
I'm going to say it's a TV movie, but I'm just going to let you know it wasn't just one piece.
Okay.
Not quite a miniseries, but not quite a movie, so I don't want to lead you astray with too many yeses and nos.
Hmm.
So let's just say it was a two-part movie, let's say.
Okay. Yeah. Whose turn is it?
It is Matt's turn, I think.
Okay.
I think it's mine. Two-part movie. Man, I was going to say, I don't think this is the right answer. I can't remember how many parts it was. It wasn't The Stand, was it?
The Stand?
Yes.
Is it the It miniseries with Tim Curry?
It. That's not the answer, but...
Oh, okay.
It's an object.
No, but it was from that.
Yes.
Okay, is it a balloon in a sewer?
It is a balloon in a sewer. You are correct.
Woo!
If you didn't guess that, I would have absolutely gotten it.
Everybody's winning their bucket choosing, so let's see if he continues with Matt's next pick.
I am interested in what you give us for group.
Group. All right. Ask your question. I will answer it.
I'm going to go with the theme just to rule it out. Is it Star Trek related? It's easy to get rid of. That gets rid of so much ground when it comes to groups of people.
Okay. Was it a network show? From a network show?
Yes.
NBC.
Was it... did we talk about that show on the podcast today? This is my go-to every time.
No. Finally, it is no.
ABC.
Is it a streamer, Netflix streamer?
No, it's a network.
Yeah, when we say network, we're sort of talking terrestrial, so you can ask another question.
All right, terrestrial, I like that. Is it from the... Is it a 90s show?
I'm going to give you that one.
Okay. The
show has definitely happened in the 90s. I wouldn't assume that this thing happened in the 90s inside of it.
Oh, okay. Is it X-Files related? We talked about that too.
We have not talked about the show today.
Was it on CBS?
I feel like you have a strategy, Tara, and I don't. I'm just throwing stuff at the board. Is it, let me just get this out of the way because I promised myself I'd make one of these jokes sometime during the record.
Yeah.
Well, is it Dr. Odyssey related? Okay, good.
Was it from a show on Fox? Oh, but it was network.
Yes.
You said all the networks.
Mm. Did you?
Was it a show on PBS? Where is it?
Was it Doctor Who? Okay. It's a group of characters. Is it the Weeping Angels?
It is the Weeping Angels from Blink. Yes. All right, Tara pulls ahead. Back to Tara, your bucket.
Okay, let's do a death.
All right, this is our last death.
Okay.
Ask your question.
Is it from a show that is still on?
No. Is it from a show that we mentioned on the podcast? I'm sorry, it's so easy. No. All right.
It's a good filter.
It is a great filter.
Yeah.
Is it from a network show? Okay.
Is it a streaming show?
Premium cable.
Yes.
Okay. HBO.
No.
Is it a 90s show? Is it a show that primarily ran during the 90s?
Okay. Is it from Showtime?
Is the lead of this show still making television? Still headlining television.
Say no.
Okay.
Is it from Starz?
Nope.
I'm trying to think what the... Now I'm just trying to think of the horror shows that you might be... Or horror-ish stuff you might be asking about.
So we've established it's on premium cable, but we haven't established where exactly. And we know it's a show we have not yet talked about on this episode of the podcast.
Which Stab is in the Dark?
Many.
Is it... It's not MST3K related, is it?
I wouldn't consider this premium cable, but maybe you would. Was it on AMC?
Yes. You don't consider that premium cable?
No, that's just cable.
Okay.
That's fine. Is it from The Walking Dead? Okay. Is it when the little girl gets killed because she's been turned into a zombie?
No, that was horrible. Mm. Yeah.
Is it when Steven Yeun gets his brains bashed out?
It is, hey! Yes.
Hey!
Brain bashing. Nicely done. Woo!
I came by that one honestly.
That was great. Nice pull. Mm-hmm. The girl, the flowers episode. What
yes, right.
Yeah. That was Tara's bucket pick. So let's go to Matt. Death is off the table.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. I'm going to live differently. Let's go with character.
Character. All right. The one and only character we have today.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Okay. Is this a show that is still currently running?
Is it from a network?
Is it a show we talked about on the podcast?
No. I wish I could provide you one of those.
Is it from a streaming platform?
Okay. Is it less than 3 seasons?
It is not less than 3 seasons.
Okay. Is it from a cable show?
Yes.
Is it from... Is it from FX? Okay. Is it from American Horror Story? Okay.
Gotta name FX shows now. Is it from The Strain?
Yeah, I was definitely thinking about something to do with The Strain and their fucking billboards, but
that
I elected not to.
That was AMC, I think.
No,
was
that was
it?
FX.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hey, I'm killing it. I don't even know why.
Yeah. All right, back to Tara.
Okay. Is Ryan Murphy a producer on this show?
Okay. Well, that narrows it down. FX or related. Oh, is it Alien Earth?
It's not still on.
Damn it.
Did it premiere in the 2010s?
Yes.
Fuck, but it's not American Horror Story.
No. Ooh. Little on the nose.
Okay.
I mean, that would have been a little on the nose to pick something from American Horror Story.
Right.
You know how I feel about noses.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of what a nose thing is. This is Fallout. Oh, is it something from The Americans, even though that wasn't really a horror show? Okay.
All right. Back to Matt.
I think this was an FX show. Is it something from Snowpiercer?
No.
That was TNT, I think.
Yeah. Okay, you're right.
Fuck. My mind is blank of FX shows that were not from Ryan Murphy in the 2010s.
Does eliminate a lot of shows.
Fuck.
Like we're running out of steam on this one.
I know. Oh, God. Okay. Is this from Legion?
All right. Last guesses here.
Is it from... Fargo was an FX show? Fargo?
Not from Fargo.
Okay.
All right. Last guesser.
Was it from Justified? It
was not from Justified.
Oh, that started in the teens. I mean, the aughts.
The show was Atlanta.
Oh, God. It's Teddy Perkins.
Teddy Perkins, yes. No points there, but Teddy Perkins was the answer we were looking for.
A little on the nose.
All right.
Shame.
Tara, bucket, please.
Episode.
All right. Episode locked in.
Is this show still on?
Is this a show we talked about on the podcast today?
Still not.
Okay.
Is it a network show?
Yes.
Was the network NBC?
It is not NBC.
Okay. Is it a show that mostly ran in the 90s? Okay.
CBS.
Yes.
Okay. Is it a show from the 80s?
No.
Okay.
Is it a show from the last 5 years?
No.
Is it a show from the aughts?
Nope.
Is it a show from the 2010s?
Is it a show from the 70s?
Nope. Is it a show from the 60s? We can do this all day.
Okay.
Hey!
Okay.
From the 60s on CBS.
I think I know what the show is, probably.
Now we're going to play a fun game called Can Matt Name a Television Show from the 1960s that ran on CBS? Is it Gunsmoke? That's all I got.
But wait, hang on. Before I buzz you, what do you think was the horror element in Gunsmoke?
I can make educated guesses or I can maybe name TV shows that fit the billing. One or the other.
All right. Fair enough.
Is it from the Twilight Zone?
From the Twilight Zone.
Okay. Is it Beauty is in the Eye of the Beholder?
You don't have to name the episode. You can give me the gist of it if you don't know the title. Yeah.
Yes. Great episode, by the way. Is it the There Was Time Now reading episode?
Oh, I love that episode. It's not.
Is it Gremlin on the Wing?
Gremlin on the Wing. Woo! Nightmare at 20,000 feet. Starring
and a Star Trek tie-in.
Star Trek's William Shatner, yes.
Damn it.
Let's get the scores, please. We're going to wrap this up in a second.
Okay. Matt has 2. I have 4.
All right. Let's do 2 more, and we're back to Matt. Part of the bucket choice. Characters off the table.
Okay.
Death's off the table. Okay. Episode is off the table.
Okay.
We've got scenes, okay. Groups of characters, location, object lift.
All right. Let's go with scene.
Scene. All right. What can we give? All right. I got it. Ask your question.
Is it a TV show that aired in the last 10 years?
No.
Okay. Is it a network show?
It is a network show.
Is the network NBC?
Yes.
Is the show V?
What the fuck is happening? Yeah.
I was waiting for something V to come up. All is right. It the scene where the babies are born and the normal looking baby has a snake tongue?
Yeah. It's the V twins. One normal, one not so normal, and then one not so normal.
I was pretty. I probably would have been able to guess that one too. Yeah. So that was a layup, really.
All right, last bucket, please. Tara.
Let's do object.
Object. I'm interested to see if we can get this one. Go ahead.
Oh, geez. Okay, is it from a show currently on?
No.
Is it from a show we've talked about on the podcast today?
Is it a network show?
Yes.
Was the network NBC?
Yes.
Was the show from the 90s?
Okay. Was this a horror branded show?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. NBC horror branded show. Interesting.
I'm a little nervous because maybe, you know, what you think is horror and what I think is horror might be different, but it's definitely way more horror than a network usually goes.
I'm trying to think. Just going to stab. Was it Battlestar Galactica?
Sorry. Remind me. Did you say it was or was not 90s?
Was not.
Is it Amazing Stories?
No.
Did it run after after the year 1989? Did it run after the year 1989?
Yes.
Okay, so we're more modern than not. If it was on NBC, was it a musical?
Was it Hannibal?
Oh, that's
good. What was it from Hannibal?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get this one, but we'll
there's
see.
So many things. Is it the person who was flayed so they looked like an angel?
What was that called? Something Eagle. Blood Eagle. No.
Blood Eagle. No. Okay.
Ooh, it's been way too long since I watched Hannibal. I got to go through my field. Is it Scott Thompson's snarky demeanor?
Can we give him a point for that? I feel like he should get a point for that.
Sure.
Very good.
God, an object from Hannibal.
Yeah.
Is it his beautiful pocket square?
The horror of the
horror
beautiful
of his pocket square. It's too beautiful.
I am going to tell you guys it is a kill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a kill.
Okay. Oh, I mean, it's a death. It's a, you know, it's a presentation of some sort. Yeah.
I don't remember the context, but I remember the dinner scene with Lawrence Fishburne. Is it related to, is it the dinner scene with Lawrence Fishburne and Hannibal?
It is not that scene.
Okay.
It's an object.
Yeah. Yes, sorry.
Did they reproduce from the second movie? Did they ever do someone like, eating from the brain of a live person?
No.
Okay.
No. I'll give you a hint. It's an object, but it's also a person.
Hmm.
All right. To Matt.
That's how most of the episodes went. Yeah. What?
It is not Mad Mikkelsen's cheekbones.
Okay. Okay. I can just start describing affectations then, yeah. There was a glass sliding thing? Glass panels thing?
Yes, the slides of...
Not that one. Okay.
Not her.
Am I misremembering that there was a corpse inside a horse?
Probably was. That sounds like some homage to the Brazen Bull or whatever that thing was called in Rome.
Yeah.
It's not that. All right. Another hint?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
It is also a musical object. It's something to do with music.
Oh.
Oh. I vaguely remember there was an episode where someone was... Is it the person that was turned into, like, a lute?
I'll give you that. It is the human cello.
Cello.
Human cello.
Yes, that was one of... Not Hannibal's kill. It was one of the Tobias's kills. But that was...
Right.
He was like, hey, Hannibal, look at me. I made a cello out of a guy. And then you played... I think his throat was open, and then you played his vocal cords with the bow.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That show was so good. All right. That's
that
regulation.
Was crazy.
Let's get the scores, please.
Matt got 3 points in the game,
nicely
and four
done.
If you include...
I do.
I already forget what it was.
It was
Scott Thompson's Starkey Attitude.
Yeah.
And I finished with 5.
All right. Close game. Nicely done.
Tara.
I can now go downstairs and look my wife in the eye and let them know that I held my own on the quiz, which is all that really mattered to me. Andrea won't disown me for this.
I think you did pretty well.
She texted me before you started and said, I will leave him. So,
here's the ones we didn't get to. The Leftovers rapture scene from the first episode of that. And that was the scene. We also had Salem Lot's window scene with Danny Glick there from the movie. We had the gentleman from Buffy and our group of characters. We had Bates Motel. And that's it. That's all we had.
Well curated.
Thanks. And speaking about that's it for this episode. We took a leisurely stroll through the burbs before going around the dial with stops at Shrinking, Interview with the Vampire, The X-Files, and that's it. Sean proved that all good things must get in the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's non-regulation game time. Next up, it's How to Get to Heaven from Belfast and more on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
T. Earl Grey Hot,
the absent Sarah D. Bunting, and Matt Monagle,
happy to be here.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
That was an incredible program.
I am glad you approve.
Is this show still on?
Is this show still on?
No. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was typing in the wrong spot. Give me one second just to fix.
I love that.